Talk Show.
It's the Daily Talk Show, episode 590.
What's happening, guys? What's going on? Welcome back, Marky Jacket.
Thank you for having me.
I've got a beer in my hand. I can't clap.
You don't clap much, to be honest.
But I'll cheers you, Jacko.
Thanks, mate.
Here we go. Cheers.
To the soda stream. Cheers.
Yeah. Lovely Stomping Ground Brewing Co. Beer.
My lager.
Jacko, are you a big water drinker?
Yeah. Oh, at work I am, because I've got the routine down. I've got a bottle next to me. And I keep feeling it.
Oh, that's good.
On the weekend, though, goes out the window.
He actually goes against it. He hates it. So on the weekend, he hates it.
Yeah.
Doesn't drink it on the weekend.
I mean, water is it's such an easy thing to do, but so hard.
It needs to be part of a routine, I think. Mm. Otherwise, you just forget. And then you take a piss at the end of the day and you're like, fuck, that's yellow.
It's like butter.
Yeah. You've never met a guy more descriptive about his lack of hydration, yeah, and that's that. Josh Jansen.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I reckon the other day I was...
It's fucking nuclear fluid.
Yeah.
I felt like it was
my spinal fluid. You know, when your back gets really sore.
It's like you've had
coffee and it's to the point where it's like the bit that's jelly in between.
See what it looks like.
Things have just gone dry.
See what you're explaining. Epidural.
No, so I've had an epidural.
Have you seen the liquid?
No, I didn't, because it's a big fucking needle. And
yeah,
they've
got so
me,
you're talking from experience. I'm talking from watching someone have it. Mm-hmm. The liquid is like the thing you're describing in a bag and it drips down. Did you not remember? Did Claire have an epidural?
No.
She didn't have one?
No.
Hero. My wife did, so.
Yeah, right. So it's in a bag, so it feeds it like in through a drip.
I thought it was an injection. It's a bag of liquid dropping down and it's got you're basically on your tummy or on your side and they've fed this thing into your spine, the area. Yeah.
My guess is it drops down
and pushes the liquid into your wherever.
I think it'd be different for different
non-pregnant guy.
Yeah. So I think that for me I'm not like going through a birth.
So maybe it's
so
less.
It was just like just straight away they put it in.
Injection?
Yeah.
Where did you have it?
Where or when?
No, where did they put it?
They put it in my back. Yeah, spine. And so I had two herniated discs.
Wanted to know exact spine.
No, I didn't.
Or five. I don't know.
What it sounded like.
But no, they went to a sports doctor. He was sort of saying, I don't think, like before I had the MRI, I think he was a little bit skeptical.
Yeah.
He's like, you should be okay. Just go to get this MRI done, blah, blah, blah. This is a guy who was like very laissez-faire about the whole thing. Then I came back and he was like, yeah, that's fucked up. And he's like, 80% chance you'll need surgery within the next 3 months.
Oh, shit.
And so they gave me the epidural and then I was like, I lost like 15 kilos because I'm like, I'd much prefer before doing any of the surgery, how about I actually just be a healthy weight?
Yeah.
You're scared.
When you had the epidural, did you lose feeling from your legs down or?
No, it's a fair question.
It's obviously just a lower dose.
Well, it's a cortisone like injection.
Different.
It's still called an epidural. What is an epidural, Sebs? I think an epidural is an injection into the spine.
I thought epidural was a substance that is like a liquid.
No, an epidural is a spinal procedure that delivers anesthetic or pain-killing drugs to nerves that convey pain.
What were they putting into Amy's back?
And so that's what happened. So it'd be a painkiller type of thing. And for me, it's like a what happens if you take a Voltaren? What's that? Like
anti-inflammatory.
It's like an anti-inflammatory thing that works over time.
Mm-hmm. You can get them for tennis elbows, as in like not epidural, but get what you're talking about.
Cortisone
injections. Mm-hmm. You used to have Osgood Schlattis as a kid, Michael.
Yeah.
In the fun medical fact.
In the knees.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I don't know how much that's what it was called, but I don't know how much it was like affecting me.
It's a big thing.
What does it do?
Is it a big thing?
It's a big thing. Durham McInnes from Core Advantage, if you have Osgood Schlattis and you need help, he has an online program.
Right.
We put it in the link show notes. You can pay for it. He's basically helps people get out of it and start reforming.
Yeah. See, I didn't go to that level. Durham didn't
have the program online. Yeah, then. He's the only guy in the world that knows this.
It's almost like I just stopped talking about it and it just kind of went away.
Yeah. That is
A bit like JJ's hemorrhoids.
It sounds like I've got hemorrhoids. I don't.
I know. You do.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very, it's an interesting point, the whole like just forget about it or fix. That's what, how I've treated my ankle. Because I rolled my ankle walking down the stairs. I mean,
it's a good approach if it wasn't ever that bad and it was healing itself as you go. The problem with Osgood Schlattus is it can be really bad.
What does it? What is Osgood Schlattus?
Can you look up, can you find Durham's online program?
How would you describe it, Mike? You had it or still potentially have it, but you're just ignoring it.
No, it was like in the front of your knee. It was just like a discomfort and it had a bit of a bulge like or something like that.
I remember your bulge. Yeah. I remember. I touched it. I remember feeling your knees. It's not as bad. I remember it when we were kids. It was like, your knees looking funny, bro.
My friend Lachlan had that.
Funny looking knees.
No, he had
Osgood Schlattus.
He had the ball, like a little bone sort of sticking out type of thing.
Weird. Mr. Sevs?
Yeah, I found his course, The Secret to Curing Osgood Schlatter Disease, Pain Schlatter. Elimination.
And what is it? Program. What is the disease?
It's the common cause of knee pain in growing adolescents.
Oh, it's growing pains.
It's an inflammation of the area just below the knee where the tendon from the kneecap attaches to the shin bone.
Mm. Oof. Yeah. Do you remember growing pains? Do you remember waking up like with furious pain throughout your bones and your legs? Mm. Did you have that?
Mm. I don't really remember them. It's top of mind because I just watched Pete Shepard's TED Talk.
Oh, yeah.
Growing pains.
He talks a lot about that.
Yeah. Growing pains. And he does a bit of a fucking dance. You see that?
Two-step.
He does the two-step.
We're with Harry, Happy Harry, the next day. And a guy who was high on drugs was in front of us going, ugh. And then he said, he's doing Pete's two-step. Which was actually quite topical.
Fuck, that's funny. So we'll put that in the show notes, Durham's. Yeah, just if you're a young adolescent battling Osgood Schlattus.
Is it Schlatter or Schlattus?
I like Schlattus. It sounds better.
It says Osgood Schlatter disease.
Schlatter.
Maybe Schlattus is if you've got two, plural.
Yeah. Jacko, you wanted to catch up with us. We said, yeah, that'd be great. And then you got here and we said, let's do a podcast and talk about it on the podcast, whatever you wanted to talk about. So what do you want to talk about?
Guys, you know what I mean? Financial trouble.
He actually said the opposite. He said some stocks that he has are going hemorrhoids. Pretty well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm. I know Josh was dealing with 10 mil hemorrhoids.
No, he's telling me some stocks he's got have done well. And then I told him about how.
What sort of stocks?
Just a stock. You don't have to say if you don't want to.
What is Afterpay? The stock? Afterpay. Yeah.
He invested early days of Afterpay.
Yeah, I've invested in Afterpay too. As in like the joke is that you just bought stuff on Afterpay.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I haven't actually ever.
But then I told him about how our friend, he's your friend too, Conspiracy Jimmy, bought 5 chairs online, computer chairs, for 1 Bitcoin. Those Bitcoins were worth 18 grand at one point. So we paid 18 grand for 5 computer chairs, bro.
It's so far down, like Bitcoin now. But anyway.
I mean, they're still probably worth, seven grand?
I was going to say 3.5.
They went low.
12,000.
Fuck, they're back up. He's got $12,000 chairs.
I was thinking of, there's no currency that would have been 3.5. Anyway, what have you been thinking about? What's going on?
Oh, so, well, when starting podcast.
Mm-hmm. I'm pumped.
So I've obviously been thinking about it for a while. You've had a couple of cracks at me. When am I going to start it when I've been on? So I've just been noting things down, trying to get my position on what it is that I want to do. So I said to you at some stage, I want to sit down with you guys and just sort of do a bit of brainstorming, get a bit of feedback. Mm-hmm. Feedback's, you know, good thing for moving through, developing something. Mm. And then we're here.
Right. Welcome.
Yeah.
Time for feedback. All right. So I'm joking. I've heard your podcast, the first episode. Have you not released it?
No. I'm not going to do that yet. I'm just going to bank a few, work out if it's something I want to keep doing before.
Yeah. I mean, this is how were you with feedback when – so Mikey was an industrial designer. You were at uni.
Yeah.
You designed – a bit like 3D Dill, to be honest. Mm-hmm. You did the same course, industrial design. You didn't do a thesis.
No.
You were a dropout.
I actually was. And then I went back. This is a bit of a side thing. But then I went back and so I dropped out after 2.5 years. And then I was working. And so I went back and I was like, okay, I've just got to convince lecturers to give me some credits for some subjects. This is probably one of the best things I've ever done. I went back.
Fuck, he's got to work out.
Went back, spoke to a couple of lecturers. I ended up getting given three subjects out of four. And then they're like, you just got to do one and we'll give you a degree.
What did you do? Wait,
so how many years had you done? Two?
I'd done two and a half.
But then he went into a job that was specific to industrial design.
Yeah. So just, what is it called?
Industry something.
Yeah.
Industry credit. Yeah. Like Barefoot Investors done his financial counselling course to help people, you know, counsel people. But he got a whole bunch of it because he's had so much experience in the field. And then he just, you got to get the back end credits. Mm. And so you had one subject or something.
No, you do? Four subjects.
Four subjects.
But then you only had to do one. Which one did you do?
Oh, fuck. I can't remember. I was pretty disengaged at that point.
Our mate Matt Diavella had to do he fucked all of his credits with his college stuff, ended up doing like a fitness, like weightlifting.
Module or something to get the points.
Which was outrageous because he's like a filmmaker. Mm. It was like a...
Actually, because I was still working, I actually paid some people to do some of the stuff for me.
I mean, perfect. Do you think Fiverr, like Upwork and shit.
Well, Fiverr's not good enough for you.
Definitely too low, low price point, shitty people, shitty designers. Like if paying people online, like you
I think it's got a bad rap, Fiverr, based on the name.
Mm. I mean, if you go to tommyjacket.com, the logo is from Fiverr. Mm. It's pretty basic.
But it's not like, because it started out as being, the concept being give us a Fiverr.
Give us a five. It makes
sense.
And
then they started off saying, okay, yeah, $5 for this. And then it's like, oh, you want it quickly? That's an extra
$50. Yeah. So you got all the good lettuce, it's an extra 20. Did you tell Jules Lund about Fiverr or did Jules Lund tell you about Fiverr?
Yeah, I told him about it.
Julesy was a big fan of Fiverr.
Yeah, from this guy.
Yeah, yeah. I tweeted him. This is before I started at Fifi and Jules. And I think I'd just gone for, before the interview, I knew I was going to have an interview with him. And I just said, tweet and said, hey, I think you'll love this. And then he'd already organized like a Simpsons caricature or something of himself.
Yeah, I remember him doing that. He just started like doing random stuff. Like, what else can I do? What else on Fiverr? Just give him a fiver.
Yeah, had some disposable income with his radio gig.
could have probably afforded more than a fiver.
Yeah.
And so feedback.
At uni, were you good with feedback? Or I mean,
yeah. Do you even get feedback at uni?
No, not. I mean, you
do grade.
Yeah, you do and you don't. I mean, feedback is an interesting thing because people. I was actually, funnily enough, reading an article just the other day about in a design business, feedback is often lacking, but it's one of the most important parts of the design process. At uni, you're often just kind of, here's your grade, you know, limited feedback. You could have done better. You know, that's generally my feedback.
Is your top salmon or what colour?
I don't know. What are you reckon?
I was just thinking peach? Salmon. Salmon to peach.
Yeah.
Good. Clear it up. Go on.
So anyway, what was your question?
The salmon one?
Baby's tired. So when it gets to the workplace, do you think not receiving feedback that much within a uni context, does that make us not very good feedback takers but also givers?
Feedback's hard to give. I just don't think it's part of, culturally part of what we do, you know.
And why do you think it's hard?
Well, because it's hard to be critical of someone. Often being critical of someone goes down a path of like it becoming personal, but it shouldn't be that. It should just be a criticism or an analysis of the work, you know, irrespective of who's done it.
And so then something like design or anything creative is subjective.
Design's always hard. Like designers are traditionally very touchy because it's so, like, you put yourself into it. Mm-hmm. Anything creative, like you guys would know, like anything creative, you put a lot of yourself, you know, into it. And so when someone gives you feedback or criticizes it, it can be a bit hard to take. Like I've spent years managing designers in terms of like knowing how to give feedback and how not to give feedback.
And so what? How do you give feedback then?
Having an understanding of their process of how they've gotten to that outcome mm-hmm. is really important. And people who haven't gone, don't have an appreciation for design and the process that you go through to research and conceptualize and then ideate and then, you know, refine those ideas and then land on one, two or three ideas and then work those ideas. You know, and so when someone comes in and goes, oh, you know, like, have you thought about doing it this way? You're like, you have just undone much like process. Like
is it a decision map type of thing or like a user story? Like how do you actually get to and can you deconstruct someone's process? Like from a design perspective, say if you're like building the helmet, for instance, as an example, you've got, it needs to be functional in regards that it needs to protect for like impact.
Yeah. Oh, no, they just went for looks.
Who gives a shit about safety?
It's got to look good.
So you have the impact thing and then you have it could be performance. So like wind going in, what's that called?
Aerodynamics.
Is that like how you're doing it?
I mean, that's going back a number of years, but the helmet design stuff, that's Johnny, who is the first person that I had on that I did the potty with here. Through working for him, I build up a good sort of, because he's very creative. He's always got an opinion. He's very intuitive. So he would often, you know, I'd be sitting there literally carving this helmet out of clay. And I'd spend a day on this fucking tiny little detail, and he'd sort of come in and just naturally love what was going on and just want to get involved. He's like the most enthusiastic person you'll meet. And so he would sit down and then he'd start having a little fucking play around with it, and you'd be sitting there going, okay, no, this is fine.
And you can't undo clay.
No, it's not duplicating like, a sequence in Premiere Pro. Yeah.
Why clay? It fucking sounds like the medieval times. Why not CAD? Or do people still use clay?
So at that time, clay, like I'd never done it before, and then I took the approach of how do they design cars, which is a very complex surface object. Which means there's a lot of angles going on. There's a lot of, you know, you've got to join this panel and this panel. And, you know, so I was like, that's where I'm starting. I'm going to start with model making, clay, that sort of thing.
Did you do the helmet to scale?
Yeah.
Do cars to scale though, obviously.
Yeah.
They do clay cars.
Yeah.
Cool.
Really?
Yeah, of course they do.
How heavy is that?
Of course they do. Oh, I'm sorry. Jeez, I'm fucking stupid sometimes.
Can we just
the whole car made out of clay?
Yeah.
That's cool. Hollow, obviously.
Cool fact. Can we just drop in one cool fact that we heard this week about the machines that bore tunnels for train systems or new underground tunnels for cars? Yeah. They can't get the fucker out. They spend millions of dollars on the piece of machinery. They send it down and press it and it goes.
Doesn't come out.
So they dump the really expensive piece of machinery. They bore it to somewhere. They bore it down somewhere.
Oh, because they can't then get it back up.
There's no reverse. So they spend millions of dollars boring a tunnel.
But hang on, isn't the idea of a tunnel that goes in and then out?
Don't know. I didn't ask that much.
Yeah, we didn't ask that much. But I was more concerned about the driver.
I've never driven into a tunnel and gotten to the end gone, fucking hell, how do I get out? There's a big boring machine here.
Maybe they lose too. Let's look into this. Josh and I, wow. Wow. Well, oh, my God. Josh, like, imagine the driver. Is there a driver in it?
Yeah.
That's how you
Jason,
get
Jason, if you're listening to this and can confirm what the
It's one of those things you hear about someone at Chadston that saw somebody.
Oh, yeah, the wallet thing.
It's an inside thing.
And so the clay and the helmet. Where'd you even buy the clay from? You just went to a crafts place?
Online, I think. Yeah. Mate, we're going back a number of years. But, yeah, online I bought it. I did a lot of research around the best thing you got. And then I got, like, I had a like a head form, so it replicates a standard or a medium size head, and I had that cut out of like CNC cut out of a material that was it's almost like a plastic material, and then I laid the clay up on top of that, and it would allow me to get the thicknesses right, and I could drop you know a ruler into it or I'd drop it whatever, get all the thicknesses right, play around with the detail. Mm-hmm. Anyway. You then take that clay form and you go and you 3D scan it. So then that gives you your digital file. And then I took that digital file, which was just, or you can just imagine a file that's like as messy as a clay model. And then you take, and then I took that and sat down with like a automotive designer, and he used AutoCAD or Alias to stitch and design all the surfaces so that it converted the file from something that was like really messy to something that was really clean, and you can create a tool out of it.
And so how close was the thing that you did with the clay into the final product?
It really close. Like it was exactly what I had in clay was what ended up on someone's head.
In the Tour de France.
It did make the Tour de France, yeah.
That's a fun fact.
Yeah.
You know when you find facts out about your brother and you brag about them?
It's a good one.
I hope he does the same about the podcast.
He's had one can of stomping around. He's a bit tipsy. He's getting both. Getting around. Who, Mikey? It. Yeah, no, you.
The boring machines, so if the tunnel's big enough, they send one in from each end, and so then they meet in the middle and then they dig off to the side and then ditch them there. But if the tunnel's small enough, then it'll just go right through.
Yeah, and it makes sense, logic, if you're going through a mountain and you can get out the other side. We could get out. Let's ditch the
fuck. So why are they doing it on either?
Well, for efficiency, right? If you're having two
digging towards
each other, sense. Then it makes sense.
Okay. It takes 6 months to dig halfway. Like, you do 6 months both sides and you've got a tunnel in 6 months.
Yeah. Because they only go like less than a metre per hour. They're slower than a snail.
Slower than a snail, that's a good fact.
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
But faster than Mason. No. So feedback-wise, I was thinking about feedback. Early days, is it worth approaching feedback and having the understanding that it's painful and that's what you have to actually put up with? So it's like it's – you haven't done the work yet to work out what feedback and the feeling you get from having feedback is actually sensical or you shouldn't listen to. So Jules Lund used to give me a lot of feedback in my videos. I felt yuck about it, but I acknowledged, like in the time I was just like, oh, this feels great, but Jules, this feels horrible, but Jules is so great. And then I started at the other side when my videos got better, I was like, fuck this guy.
But do you think it's, respect?
Like I was respecting
if you have respect for whoever's getting feedback.
But he actually gave me great feedback and I was like, holy shit, when you see someone's feedback implemented, even when it feels yuck, but it makes it a better video. Mm-hmm. So it cuts out a minute of a video, 2 minute video, and you're like, I've got the same video and I didn't want to do the things he was telling me. But I did them and now they – and so then you're like, you're downloading his system in some ways to go, oh, I see what he's meaning by that. Mm-hmm.
There's good feedback. There's people who can give feedback and then people who just shouldn't.
There's trusted feedback and then there's fuckwits on YouTube. Yeah.
But it's also, I think, like context. Like, do they understand who the audience is? Yeah. And, like, I think that you can work out whether feedback is good or bad based on how much context the people have or what they're bringing to it, right? So it's like, okay, say, for instance, cutting it down, like using that example, cutting a minute off, that is using a specific school around we need to get to things quicker. It needs to, like, it's a web video, it's that sort of style. But there's also different styles require different tool sets. And so sometimes you see people's blind spots where if they've been using a hammer their whole life and then you're creating something that needs a drill, they will probably suggest a hammer. And at that point, you need to consider that.
The old hammer and drill.
The old hammer and drill.
It gets you good. But that's why you kind of have your safe people around you that you are seeking feedback from, hopefully. External feedback outside of the safe people. Just why are they giving you feedback in the first place?
Yeah.
Unsolicited feedback through YouTube. Geez.
Yeah, comments.
Like the stuff that we've had, some of the stuff that we've had.
Yeah.
Dude, you have no idea about what we think about. And it's like, it's so far from context that it's just at that point, just a dot, like just random feedback, just like throwing anything because they feel like they need to. It's easier to give feedback than it is to do the work.
Well, I think also it's easy to say something than not to say something as well. And so for me, I reckon
it's feeding their issue or their if they're thinking at that point.
But also like you're doing like relationship management. Like if your mate's doing something and you know that something might not be right, I used to be like, oh no, you're fucking like you don't do it that way. I've done it. But then I'm like, it's that whole thing of you shouldn't like steal other people's problems from them. Mm. Like they need to have that experience and go through that. Otherwise they won't completely be able to connect the dots.
Mm. Can you also, when you're not doing the work and then you're sort of invested in the project, there's a chance it's like it's whatever if you think it's not as great as you like it, whatever you put out it could be shit and you think it's good or like I think there's just anything you do it's like take 20% off it and it's still probably of a okay standard so then like your internal standard about the thing you're doing is actually way out of whack like because there is people that will love it and the opposite. And so if you end up in the middle, it's like it's
– Yeah. I think I mean, that's why Seth Godin is just like ship. And so why aren't you shipping?
Yeah, so what's –
So to tie back to like the podcast thing. So it's not so much feedback. What I was actually wanting to do with you guys was sort of sit down and workshop where this is coming from because I suppose the biggest challenge for me is if I go into this and I don't have a good foundation of – What am I doing by hosting this environment? There is a chance that it will kind of just fizz out, and you won't really have an outcome because mine is quite tied to. So it's called None of My Business. So it's a play on it's a business podcast about people. And I suppose what I've been working on just internally over the last couple of months is. What is it that I'm actually doing here? Like, what am I actually, what do I want out of people? Because, I've asked a few people, which I'm going to do one next week or the week after.
Well, what he's asking is get studio time.
Well, you've got the comments set up.
I've got the comments.
Oh, yeah. No, you can ask, mate.
I
mean, we're pretty happy at the moment. So
you got a nice light. But
You ask a guest to come on and they ask you another question and then you're like, oh, fuck. Does it get you thinking about that from that perspective?
I suppose it's like I need to make sure if I know that I'm going to host a space and host a conversation, I need to make sure that it's authentic and it's something that I find interesting, that I've got it. Like if the basis is like I'm interested in business in general, what is it? How far off that path do you go? Because you don't want to kind of just go in with a couple of questions, with a couple of strategies or questions, and then it go, all right, well, there's nothing else to really talk about.
Well, I think there is because I mean, for now, business is so intertwined with life. What are you doing outside of business that is making you a higher performer? Business.
But that's its own style. So I guess like part of it's like it's the who's it for, what's it for thing. And so obviously you're looking at it from an interviewer perspective, which makes sense, which is like from a base level, you need to be interested in it. And then the secondary thing is like, okay, for the audience, who is actually going to listen? Yeah. Do you have a sense?
Or what the audience are going to get out of it. Like so for me personally, it's a no-brainer. Like I want to expand my network. I enjoy conversations with people about what they're doing and how they do it.
You're good at it.
I like talking about that connected, all the things that are relatable to what I do and what they do and things that aren't. On a sort of more foundational level, I'm sort of sitting here and going, what's the next thing in my career? Or my life or whatever that I want to, maybe it's time for a pivot. I don't know. So podcasting is a platform which, you know, is obviously very achievable these days. And is that the right, is it the right platform or is it, I don't know.
Yeah. And I think that's like the tricky thing, especially niching. So like I think what we've created with the Daily Talk Show, we've created a platform where it's us as a brand talking about what we want to talk about, having the people we want to have on, and then almost sort of molding it in over time based on who we're picking and what we're talking about.
I also think that we can over intellectualize the foundation or the structure of a creative project. So another, like none of my business could be, you know, five personal questions maybe relating to, like you can just look at the structure of how you lay out an episode. You can have somebody on, an old friend, Andrew Melody, that you grew up with, who's an old best, you know, he's your best mate. He's a business person. He's in, you know, non-for-profit sector. Like there's so many varying things that you can have conversations about.
Yeah.
And so that's where I think you can.
Well, that serves Mikey, I guess, which makes sense. But I think the question that you're trying to work out maybe is it's like, what is the promise that you're making to the audience?
But does it have to be found in the first episode, the second episode?
True.
Like it can it not be, this is a evolution 50 episodes in. That's I'm giving it 50 episodes and I'm going to test and learn, carve away the, you know, the helmet. Like you're learning as you're going. And so you take that creative process and so your chips aren't all in on the first round. Because then it's like a higher chance of it not stacking up how you thought it was based on having all those chips on it being a certain way.
I feel like being able to define it in some sense of what where it sits for me but also where it sits for potentially the listener also helps the guest.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like I've asked three people and only one has responded. You know, and, you know, like that's not a big deal, but that was an interesting exercise to go through to go, there is a level of resistance there because one, you don't have a track record. They can't look at what you're about and what you're going to ask. Like, and people, you know, like they're naturally like, oh, fuck, what am I, what do you want, what do you want to know from me? What are you doing? What are you?
And so I think like if we look at us as an example, I think that we've created this promise around we're showing up every day, which I think is part of it. But I don't. I think that we've used everything else around the format as our promise rather than the content. But if we think about anything that we listen, that we watch, that we enjoy, they all have those promises. It's not like if you're watching an episode of your favorite TV show, it doesn't like one day be a comedy or and the next be a drama. It's sort of like it has these commonalities so that people know what they're getting every time.
So understand the through line or the tagline.
Yeah, I think it definitely is the through line, but I think thinking about it from a promise perspective, when someone listens, so there can be a bunch of things that can change. So for instance, you look at like Casey Neistat, you know, like the YouTuber. Think about like what his promise was. So his promise was a daily vlog in New York City. And then his audience definitely changed when he started to change those promises and say, okay, I'm going to do this type of video now or that one. And so I think early on, I don't think we did it in a massive way, but I think that for the most part, that's what people need is that specific thing where it's like for just a specific format that can be repeatable over a bunch of
– And I know what you know, like what you're saying, TJ, is – You find that, like you find your format.
Yeah, because you're saying who is that for though? For the audience or for yourself, Josh?
So I think that it's about the audience, but I also think that it's a part of reconciling as well, right? So I think that even though we didn't come to the show with some things sorted, I think that we had like a very sort of clear vision on these other elements. And so I think that potentially for us, it was very much around audience first, around like how we're building that community and audience. And like, because we didn't even have guests for the first 50, it wasn't even like a consideration around that networking stuff. And so I think that as podcasting is getting bigger and more people are doing it, it's definitely seen as an opportunity of like, as you said, growing the network, self-development, all of these things. And by being able to then dial it in from that audience promise perspective, I think it then will – I think like looking at it as a season probably makes sense. Even though we didn't do seasons, I think saying, okay, I'm going to do a 12-episode season and the promise stays the same for those 12 episodes.
Yeah.
You go very specific and clear in that, and that's where the iteration comes in, because after the season two, you might say, I'm moving a little bit over this way or that way.
And I landed on that recently. I'm like, season one, to call it that, is experimentation and allowing and sort of leaning into that, you know, instead of saying this is an experiment.
Yeah.
And there is no outcome other than where it ends up, you know, after X amount of episodes or X amount of interviews or whatever it might be.
Could it also dictate the content in a way? Like, I wonder if, say, if you were playing in that experimentation, if you were to be meta about it, actually saying, like, what's one thing that you're at the your first version of right now, like from a business perspective?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, if you play into that, like, the iteration of things, then it becomes very clear as well, because then it's like, oh, not only am I experimenting, I'm making it part of the format. And so every time you experiment, every time you do make a little adjustment, you're actually making a better show.
Yeah.
And so the when it comes to communicating the, like, doing the sentence or two, what's the sentence at the moment? How do you describe it to people?
Well, that's kind of where I'm sitting. I've got a whole lot of stuff that I just keep kind of dumping out of my head. But I haven't really landed on it. And I suppose, you know, and to do that properly, we probably need to have a whole lot of stuff that I've written down in front of us. But
I think your network's strong enough to get people in without having to have that sorted. The thing is the experiment thing. Like, I love that idea of the experiment is part of the theme of the show for the season.
And I landed on that because I kept having these little barriers, like, what's the intro to the show? You know, because you listen to a lot of podcasts and you're like, this is none of my business. It's a podcast about blah, blah, blah. And I couldn't get, I was like, what is it? And so I was like, I'm just going to eliminate that, the need for that intro, and just start talking to people.
Definitely.
And then I'll work out the intro later once and I'll come back and edit that in when I need to. And so that's where the experiment thing came. I was like, what am I actually doing here? I'm like, well, I'm just genuinely experimenting with something for me that could be something for other people, which could be something for the people that I get to sit around a table and chat to. And so then I was like, well, that's got to drive. Like, if that's the genuine, authentic experience that I'm having, that's what's got to drive and lead the questions and lead the people that I ask to come on. And
yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I think, like, the I find point of difference like an interesting thing, like, especially in this sort of market that's open and anyone can do it. It seems like that's going to become more and more of a thing.
Before you start.
Like, to have a point of difference.
Think,
and this is, I guess, the hard thing, because it goes against some of the stuff that what we're talking about. And it's also like, you just need, there is that thing of needing to ship.
But if, I guess every year there's X amount new podcasts, which means there's X amount people being asked to be on podcasts. So people then become more skeptical. Like, that's why early days blown away by the people who said yes at the time that we were at the part of our journey where we were at. And I can't hold it as they just liked us. That's why they did it. It's like, there's also the reality of they have probably haven't been asked a lot. We've had a bunch of first timers on this show.
Maybe it's something around actually even saying, like, I think part of it, there's a risk in, say, in the experimentation thing, not committing to anything from a communication perspective. And maybe that's the bit that I'm thinking about, which is like, how do you just commit and say, this is a show that's doing this, and then keep in mind that not that many people are going to listen to the first episode, and if the second episode that then changes to something a little bit different. I think that
Ultimately I know it doesn't actually like, no one's going to listen, like, that's the point. And I know that for a significant amount of time. I think what I'm struggling with is, if it's not solid in my mind of where I'm coming from, there is just a chance, like I said before, that it's just will fizzle out and I'll just kind of get to this point where I'm like, what am I actually doing? What am I doing here? Like, so I think it's trying to
mid-convo.
Man, you just turn the record button off. I think we're done.
I just put my headphones on.
They copy you just like.
Yeah, so what do you like? Yeah, it's interesting. Like, how do you? Because I understand that with different parts of my life, this one's I've been lucky with the podcast that I've been able to work through that barrier. But for the 99% of other things,
so I'm an not example that. Of that is like I know I work at my best when I'm genuinely excited about something, and then if I'm excited about something, it like everything else like doesn't matter about everything else because I'm just curious and I want to just. Like keep asking questions. I want to know more, and I want to get more knowledge. So if I come at it from that point, it's all good. Like there'll be thing. I'll just keep talking, or I'll just whatever it is. I think I just need to in my mind, and again, like I flip between going this doesn't matter and it does matter, but is just going where am I coming from, and what is it that I want out of. This experience or this experiment, but look, I'm getting closer to that.
I think it's if you could just, what would it look like if you just took action on a season, minimum viable, and you reassess so that you,
you've already done it. How many and that's episodes what have you got?
No, really,
you got one, but you're doing two in the next.
I'm just gonna keep going. Like
it was a good one. Like you should put it out because it was good.
Yeah, but yeah.
Yeah. So what's the risk in putting it out now is that
there is no risk. The risk in putting it out now is there'll just be a long time between then that one and the next one, but potentially not. But yeah, there's no reason why I'm not putting it out. I listened back to most of it and I was like, yeah, that was fine. I think what it actually identified is that I can go down a number of paths, and I just had a few questions that I kind of. You know, had on my phone and I asked Johnny about and, you know, it was fine. But it probably highlighted what am I actually doing? Like, what is it? Because I deviated from, I came up with it like the concept of none of my business. I enjoy conversation about business and with people that what they're doing and, you know, all that sort of stuff. Then I sort of deviated and I said, well, it can be more than that, like you were saying before. Like it can be business and life are very integrated so it can go on a whole different tangent. But then that kind of created too much, it became too vague. And so then I came back and I said, all right, no, it does need to be, the foundation does need to be about work and work life and business and, you know, just, and that'll probably underpin most of the guests that I ask on.
And then finish with the fast five on their personal life, none of my business. What's your best investment personally?
Or start with after the fast pay. Five.
You know, like I think you know the answers though. Like I think, and so
the why thing is hard though. I think that it is difficult, especially in 2020 when there is, you can see so many people doing different things and then you just sort of assume a narrative based on what everyone else is doing, which I think is hard.
The why of why we're doing it or what?
Yeah, it's like, okay, so like if you take the networking thing, like there's a heap of ways that you can network.
Yeah.
Like you go to a meetup once a week or like there's – and so I think that that's the challenge as well for most people is it's like, okay, I could actually do this a million ways and every single way would work, and it is very hard to be looking at something day one and saying I want to try and get the first thing to be right. And I think that maybe part of it is the fear of not – continuing to do it is almost like a barrier because it's that fear of failure, really, because it's – and so if we can bypass that, if we can work out, oh, look, the reverse psychology of like, oh, maybe it won't – like, yeah, maybe this isn't forever. Maybe this is only for four episodes, but I need to actually like do it.
Yeah, I need to try it.
Well, the 10-year thing for us has only really cemented itself a year and a bit in. Because you then work out, oh, fuck, we can do that.
And, the first 100 episodes, your first 100 episodes were like, oh, I might get to 100 and be done. And so there was a little bit like definitely that happens over time and you build momentum. But then you don't know what could come out. Like if you've got the podcast as the start, then it could, you could say, okay, I'm going to transcribe this and turn it into like a blog or do something else. Or, you know what, as a basic thing, it's going to be a LinkedIn post once a week.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the why stuff is hard because
it's hard to work out before you've started something.
Well, as I said, as we've said, you know, I know personally that it's there's a drive that I have for having meaningful conversations with people. Mm-hmm. And I think the podcast gives you that unique platform to be able to do that. But
are you having it enough outside of podcasting? Like, so maybe there, I wonder if there is something in take the podcast off the table for even a week and say, who am I speaking with now that's doing exactly, who can I speak to now that would be doing exactly what I sort of, the experience I want to be having, but I'm just not recording it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm doing that
too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting.
He got you there, Josh.
No, it's good.
No, I love it.
I'm trying to spitball because I'm like, maybe you don't need, it doesn't need to be a fucking podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think you're further enough along thinking that you want to even do one, so you may as well.
Mm.
Yeah, I've got to try it. Like I think it creates a unique environment. So for whatever reason, the podcasting environment makes people kind of, you know, be a bit more honest or maybe talk about things that they wouldn't necessarily talk about. And not that you're trying to probe, but it does set up a interesting environment. Once you get someone in the door and you get them to sort of make that commitment, people that have got a lot of experience talking on, you know, the top, like, because you guys have a lot of people on that have got something to sell or something to talk about.
Yeah.
So they're generally used to it. So I'm kind of interested to talk to people that don't necessarily have that, like that aren't necessarily, they don't think they're selling anything, but they actually have really good, insightful things that they do that everyone does, but it's not necessarily celebrated like someone who's just written a book.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
I love it.
Great.
When can I listen?
Sam, yeah, I mean, the hard thing, yeah, what do you think, 97? Like, I feel like you've had so much growth in the past.
Well, he sits in the corner listening to every episode.
Year and a half.
It's fucking awesome.
What are you observing? What do you think?
Yeah, I think the whole thing around reframing it to be an experiment and the whole sort of first season being an experiment and seeing what happens is probably what I resonate the most with. It's what, I mean, I would probably do, but yeah, I mean.
You struggle to commit though, so.
I feel like just jumping in and seeing what it's like and if you enjoy it and potentially finding that reason or that structure or what you want it to be as you go. I don't know. I don't know if what other way
you can't hypothesize. Like it seems like dumb, like even thinking about it until you're fucking doing it. Right? It's like you've got a mate who's saying, "I'm thinking about the gym. Like maybe I should. I don't know." But it's like if you just like commit to 12 days of the gym.
We've got a mate.
we've all got one. But if you actually just like. Yeah, the easiest way to know is to actually go. That's going to be the whole fucking experience.
You know, something that's come up, I've told a few people about that I'm doing just because I want to kind of put myself in that experience of having to say what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so two things, when you're telling someone that you're doing it, they go, oh, what is it about? And that's probably what I'm struggling with. Mm-hmm. So it's that concise.
Mate, I feel you.
Yeah.
I feel you.
Yeah,
400
but you don't, like, but if you don't talk about, so we didn't talk about ours for the first 20 apps.
Yeah.
And so I think there's so much power in that, which is totally. Like, okay, I'm just going to fucking like, I'm not asking anyone. Like,
you also didn't have to ask anyone. Yeah. So then
you don't need feedback.
The other thing is that you ask someone to come on and the first thing they say is, what's it about?
That's what I said. Your network, we've had all your mates on. You just haven't bothered to get them on your fucking podcast.
But I get that. It's the sell. So the sell is, I'm doing an experiment.
Totally.
And that's literally all it is. And then they get like, If you bullshit, like they can only be disappointed, and you're not necessarily you don't know what the fucking answer is.
I'm doing an experiment. You're my mate. Trust me. We're just gonna have a great conversation.
Yeah.
And if not, it would be good to catch up.
Yeah. But I also think too, to your point around like if you've got a network, thinking about how where people are judging the decision of the yes or the no. Mm. So, for instance, if you're coming from a perspective of, hey, will you be on the podcast? I'm a podcaster. This is what I'm doing. This is a podcast. If you like change that to being like, I'm doing like this is a personal growth exercise. Would you help with this? I'm experimenting. I'm starting with a podcast and I'm recording these episodes. Then the question isn't fucking what's your podcast about? Mm-hmm. It's either like, yeah, we want to help Mikey and yeah, we'll give it a go and we can do that or we won't.
Yeah.
So I think there's something in that framing too. And I think that everyone does that, which is like, it's the same with when it comes to from a money perspective, when you're like having someone say do work for you. They did this whole, Dan Ariely, like a social psychologist, talks about how they did a study where they paid people a low amount and then they got people to do it for free.
Mm.
And the people who were doing work for free worked significantly harder than those that were getting a small amount. And the reason was because when you're getting paid a small amount, you're referencing what you should be getting paid.
Mm.
And so you're using that method. And when you're doing it for free, it's actually a favor. And favors. You're giving. Yeah. And so then when you are doing it for social good or if it's like a favor, you're going to put in all the effort. And I think so. There's probably something in not trying to fucking pitch it like a podcast and that you're a professional. It's all about framing. Yeah.
All mental stuff. It's about framing. Yeah. Just reframing it until you get to a point where you're comfortable.
Yeah.
It's like the experimentation thing. Like that took me a while to get to a point where I'm like, fuck, hang on a second. If I just frame this in my head as an experiment, who fucking cares?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like putting two coloured dyes in a test tube and seeing what colour it makes. Oh,
exactly. But it's probably drawing the line in the sand of no more thinking.
Yeah.
Like I think you've thought a lot. You've tested it. You've come on this show. And, you know, like I think it's all worth it on the journey of talking to other people.
If it brings you closer, like if that's the little glimpse of hope, it's like me with my fucking habits. I've got the Streaks app. It's like I'm not hitting every habit each night, but I'm like, fuck, if I can actually, I go through moments of like, oh, I haven't done them all. Like I'll fucking, do I really need to even add this one to it? But I'm like, nah, if the ones that I fucking do, the habits that I'm finishing, I'm like selecting that I've done it.
Mm.
And it just like keeps that, like, seems like it keeps that little bit of hope.
Tall Gronk the other day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's using Streaks.
Is he?
Yeah, yeah. It's fine. Have you seen the Streaks app? This is it. So it's got like all the things that you do in a day.
I just signed up to Qantas Wellbeing, so I get Qantas points for every step that I take.
Get stuff. Are you
fucking kidding me?
Mate, fucking get on it.
Mate, can't we just get a little thing in the office that's
look, Wellbeing. Making
it just shaking it up into shape.
Just can't we,
Qantas
can't
Wellbeing.
We game the fuck out of this thing?
So
what, you've walked your way to a first class ticket to London?
That's right. Anyway,
so what was Tall Gronk saying?
I fucking lost my train of thought. Well,
I was talking about the doing Streaks. Stuff.
Yeah. Streaks. Oh, I know. So I was talking to him about just another framing thing of why I'm doing it, but
he's getting free coaching, isn't he? Tall Gronk.
Yeah. That's the whole idea. This is all a front. I'm just getting Pete into my corner.
Yeah. He's a good man to have in your corner.
And I was saying to him how so many, like this is even like you can connect better. Like one of my objectives is to be able to connect better with like good mates, like mates that I see all the time.
Yeah.
And I was saying how is it a thing on the weekend? And I came away and I'm like, fuck, that was a lot of just small talk bullshit. You know, and I'm like, I've known these guys.
In a cubicle. Crazy.
I've known these guys for 25 years.
Yeah.
And yet you still come away from some of those things, not all of it, but you come away from some of those things and you're like, fucking, were you really talking about the weather?
Yeah.
Like, I know it's a bit freaky at the moment.
Is it the reframing? Is it the reframing thing? Like, that's why I love walks. I feel like when you go on a walk with someone,
absolutely,
you can't do fucking like small talk.
Yeah. So, and that's the point. That's my point. It's also about that's another thing about a podcast is you create an environment where you're like, and maybe you don't call it a podcast or whatever, but you're creating an environment where you're like, we're not going to talk bullshit.
Yeah,
let's actually dive into something that's a bit meaty, that's a bit interesting.
Do you think that you're what are you, Tall Gronk talks about the that quote, I always fuck
how
it
are
up.
You
how are you implicit in the circumstance or situation? Like how, so if you're are you fucking saying, yeah, the weather is fucking shit, isn't
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And then you drop into the mindset. Uh-huh. Like you drop into that.
Well, like, so easy.
Yeah, yeah. And then you're just like, oh, fuck, we're all here. So, yeah, yeah. Fucking weather's shit.
Yeah, outside pointing. Wow, yeah. Look at that. Yeah.
And so is there something?
Cool changes coming soon.
Yeah, yeah. How's the kids? Good. Yeah, real good.
No, good, thanks.
Good, thanks. How are you?
And so, yeah, I mean, there's something in that. But maybe I think the podcast, I think that definitely through this format for us, socially, I think that we probably enter into things quicker.
Yeah.
And I think for some of it, it's because people expect that as well.
Mm.
It's almost like you become, like when people are hearing it all the time or you sort of like, you just naturally do it more.
I went on a real rabbit hole from the Bungo Stanny episode. Yeah.
He's great, isn't he?
He's great.
What a weapon.
And so I read his book and then that put me, then through his reading his book, he put me onto another one, which is called A More Beautiful Question. Have you
heard?
Oh, it's awesome. So I'm reading that at the moment. But anyway, it's just about this concept of questioning and, you know, we almost lose the skill of questioning from the time from 4 years old, you know, because 4 year olds and you're about to cop it even more than you are now. Mm. But they just start like asking about everything. And there's about 20 questions within a space of 30 seconds. And
have you been asked what is dark?
What is dark?
Yeah, no. What is dark?
What is the sky? Where do the stars come from?
Solid questions. Like, yeah, what is dark? How do you explain that to a kid that doesn't understand?
Well, Seb light had an answer. What do you think?
Protons, photons, fucking.
Yeah, the lack of photons, I think it was.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Explain that to a 3 year old, mate.
Yeah, then what a photon?
Explain it to Tommy.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Explain it to the 3 year old's dad, mate.
Wait until they go to school and they're asking about
their homework. Yeah, but I remember you telling me this, you're at the height of your question asking at 4 and then as you grow older, age goes up, it deteriorates your question
asking. Yeah, because you start going to school. School's all about knowing the answer, and then memorization of answers, so you stop asking questions, you stop becoming inquisitive. So your peak questioning is when you're 4 years old and then it goes like that.
I mean, we would have had a massive spike in question asking over the last 2 years.
And then people are uncomfortable. Like, I reckon in the last week we've had 3 people who have said, man, you were just like, you asked a lot of questions.
After the episode.
Yeah, after the episode. Yeah. Like it's a bit confronting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think there is a, because the other thing too is I think that we try and, Because it's not socially acceptable, it seems rude to just be asking questions.
Mm-hmm.
Most people sort of lather it up in all this other shit before they get to it.
Yeah.
Whereas I think that maybe sometimes when especially when I'm tired, I'll just keep asking, just doing the questions.
Yeah, which comes from a place of curiosity, which is a good thing, you know. And that's where the kind of context of this book is. It's like, if we want to be better in business and we want to be better in designing and creating outcomes, and you know, we've got to be better questioners. Mm-hmm. Like, the Googles and the Microsofts and Amazons, you know, it's part of their culture now to be good questioners and continuing to ask questions at every level. And,
this is perfect segue to my book club. It's the Daily Talk Show Book Club, but I'm sort of running the whole thing.
Yeah.
I tried to, I clicked your link,
but
the annoying thing with Kindle is you can be signed up to Amazon.com or Amazon.com.
Mm. Yeah, I've got that with Audible, but we've got an update on that too.
Oh, good.
Because we're talking, so the book is called You're Not Listening. Is that right, Sebs?
It's your book.
You're the treasurer. Can you have a look at the details?
It is, yeah, no, it's You're Not Listening.
Okay, so you're just pushing back.
For yeah, I was.
Okay, interesting.
Kate Murphy.
Kate Murphy
yeah, you know, is the author.
He pushed back and then he straight away tells me the author. He knows he fucked up. So we're doing that book, which I think is perfect because it's all about this. It's all about like how we listen and all that sort of stuff. But what I was going to say is George, our editor, his mum runs the main bookshop in Byron Bay, and we're going to do some form of partnership where the Gronks can get a discount at the bookshop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, do you have to fly there or?
No, they deliver as well.
Oh,
and,
nice.
and she would also provide us with the book at a discount or potentially.
No, we can pay full price.
Well, she actually
her son's
said
good
for,
to us.
She said freight. But I think that we could work something out.
If you give me a business.
Yeah. Ask Harry for the company card back.
Exactly. Yeah,
Harry's still got it.
But that'll be fun. But February 1, we're starting that. I feel like you should get around that.
I actually intended to. That's why I went to buy
it. Yeah, great. Well, don't bother.
I've got 6 days. No, I don't. I've got 4 days.
Well, we had 43 click-throughs or something. How many people bought it, Sebs?
Three, I think.
We made $2.87. So it's just like, I can't be fucked pushing Amazon that hard. That's for $2.87.
Coffee shop before you put the milk in it.
Yeah, that's crazy. All right, Mikey, thank you coming on.
Yeah, I hope that I think these conversations are good, even if it's not a podcast you're wanting to start, but it's anything that you're wanting to start. It's a creative project that has all the barriers of it's only you stopping you from doing the thing.
Well, so I've been getting up at 5 a.m. for the last couple of weeks doing my yoga and journaling and reading. That's the format I'm trying to follow. And
you thought, fuck, we've gotten to the podcast. I haven't mentioned that. I've been waking up at 5 a.m. What's the point if you don't mention it?
One of the things that have been coming up is just that barrier that we put up in front of ourselves and the whole reframing thing and just, you know, like all it takes is just going, what's the excuse that like you wake up and you're like, you've got 10 excuses as to why you shouldn't get out of bed before.
Like, have we got Goggins on our podcast?
But the thing is, the main excuse I reckon is like, oh, you know what? Like
it's too comfy.
If I get up at 5, it's not even that. It's like, if I get up at 5, I'm going to be fucking tired at 2.
Yeah.
And at 2 p.m. I actually need to be at work working, you know?
Yeah, but I've got coffee.
Yeah, true. Are you drinking more?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, thanks for coming on, Booker.
It's a Daily Talk Show. Hi at thedailytalkshow.com. If you do want to join the book club, you just have to go to our Facebook group. Some people who don't have Facebook have been asking me about it.
Right.
I haven't worked. The main thing is you just got to get the book and then be ready for February 1.
Send them the link to George's mum's bookstore.
What's George's mum's bookstore called, please?
Byron Bay's bookstore.
The Book Room Collective.
The Book Room Collective.
Mm-hmm. And so
in the show notes,
if you go there in person in the next few days and say the Daily Talk Show sent you, they'll probably do something.
There's a coffee store at the front.
Yeah.
You can buy one.
Yeah, exactly. All right. See you tomorrow, guys.
See you guys.